Welcome to Hawk Weekly.
Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this is Haunt Weekly, a weekly podcast for the haunted attraction industry, covering everything from haunt aficionados to home haunters to large mega haunts and everything in between. Whether you're an actor, owner, or just lover of haunts, this we aim to make the podcast for you.
Yes.
So, how are you doing, Crystal?
Doing pretty good.
Doing good. Yes, it's our second podcast of 2016.
Mm-hmm.
New Year is behind us.
Right. We in New Orleans are in our Mardi Gras, where are the parades so we don't get trapped in traffic.
Yeah, it's that time of year. And for those not in the city, you have to understand Mardi Gras parades are legion and they are traffic nightmares.
Yeah.
And for the next, we have a short season this year, so it's like the next month and a half or so, I think it is.
Yeah, not even that. I think it's February 9th.
Yeah, it's going to be bonkers. So yeah. We have a short season, fortunately. I'm actually really glad for that. Even if it means Mardi Gras is going to kind of suck because such an early Mardi Gras.
Yeah.
Still come to the city, though, if you want to. But, yeah. We have a great, great topic today, though.
We do.
A very important one, I think.
Yes.
Probably, in many ways, I think this is the most asked question both actors and owners of haunts have.
Right.
WTF am I going to do in there?
Yeah, so basically now you've figured out where your walls go, mm-hmm. where your walkway is. So where do you put the scares and what do you do to scare people?
Yeah. And, you know, I know this is a caveat I've repeated. Once again, brief topic, brief overview, will not be thorough, blah, blah, blah. Sorry about that. Caveat, all that jazz.
Yes.
But I also want to make the caveat that this is a podcast about scares for humans.
Yes.
Not for props or anything you would trigger automatically, especially.
Yeah.
We're not talking like air cannons. We're not talking about animatronics today. Those are topics for later.
Right. They have their place.
They have their place. And I definitely think they're useful. And in fact, I know we're going to cover them in detail in Distract and Startle, another planned episode
right.
we have coming up. So we've got all these episodes planned out for pretty good ways into the future.
Right.
So, that stuff's coming, but it's not this episode. Today we're focusing on the humans and what the humans can do. And, you know, it's very interesting because we've worked with, directed, been in tandem with, and generally been around a crap ton of haunt actors.
Yes, we have. Within our haunt, with working with other haunts, and just knowing people in the community and being able to talk to the actors, you know, not as a customer, but as someone who's interested in
a fellow haunt aficionado.
Yes, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you learn very quickly that not every actor is good at the same thing.
Right.
Hey, some actors just suck, let's be honest.
Yeah, some need a lot more training than others. Some are naturals. It's just like, you know, it's a talent.
Yeah, it is.
And some people can be trained and can practice at it and learn and become great actors, but not all of them start out that way.
But one thing to remember is even good actors aren't good in every role.
Right.
I am a particularly good stealth actor.
Yes.
You put me in a room where I can hide and blend in and get amongst the crowd and mess with people.
Right.
I'm good. But I'm not, I'm 6'0", I'm like 180, 190 pounds, depending upon the day of the week and who I'm lying to. And basically, I'm not going to physically intimidate anyone.
Right.
You know what I mean? I'm not going to, rah, look at how scary and big I am. We have about half a dozen people like that on our staff.
Yeah, no kidding.
I mean, we are land of the flipping giants.
Yes. Yes.
Bernie Baxter, we have to expand the haunt because our crew got too big, literally.
Yeah, I can hear Chris saying, I'm not technically a giant.
Yes, you are a giant. Just give it up, Chris.
Yeah.
You are the giantiest giant.
So we have basically 4 or 5 actors, so about half of the actors inside the haunt.
Yeah.
are well over 6 foot tall.
Yeah, well over. Like, I'm normally one of the taller people in a room.
Yeah.
In my haunt, I'm immediately one of the shortest.
Yeah. It's yeah, like, and you're 6 foot.
Yeah, I'm 6 foot even. So it's like, yeah, I'm usually toward like the upper 25%.
I feel like we're getting a little off topic. We are.
But the point I was trying to make is, as we go through these various scares, these basic scares, it's like the periodic table of actor scares in a way. And I'm sure we've left a few out. We did our best brainstorming, but I'm sure we left a few out.
Yeah.
But as we go through this, find scares and combinations of scares that fit you.
Yeah.
And I'm sure we'll come back to this exact thing.
Yeah. One of the things I do want to mention that is important for haunt owners and operators is to remember the comfort of your actors and that they really do are the ones who make or break your haunt.
Yes.
They, you know, so keep that in mind whenever you're setting up these scares for them. How comfortable are they going to be? Because you don't want to put them... We've had the unfortunate situation of putting actors in uncomfortable positions, and
it was just not tenable.
Yeah,
and it wasn't
on purpose.
No,
it wasn't as well thought out as it could have been.
And I think we're thinking of the same thing. The one I remember most, because it happened very recently, was a scare that we tried and found very comfortable.
Right,
we had no problems with it, but we learned being there for hours and. For other people with different body dimensions than us, it was not.
Well, and, you know, the original one,
it
was pretty comfortable. But whenever we upgraded it to make it safer, we also changed it to be for kid-sized. And then we wound up not having a kid to put in it. So that was a mistake.
Yeah, that was a mistake. Yeah. Safety first, comfort second. And sometimes that those two interfere with one another.
Yeah, nail down who you're going to have there way in advance.
Yeah. All right. So, let's talk scares. Scare number one is probably the most basic, but also I would say in some ways the most difficult.
Yeah.
Scare. It's what we call the hidden actor scare.
Yeah.
Now, the basic idea here is you have a room, and an actor is hidden somewhere out of the field of vision, and they jump out and startle the person.
Right.
It sounds super simple.
It does.
And it kind of is.
Well, okay. Here's where, you know, that timing comes in.
Timing!
Exactly. Timing is everything in a haunt.
It is. It really is.
And some actors who are in the hidden thing, if they don't have any training, their instinct will be to just jump out the first time they see the first person.
Yeah.
And one of the things we talk about a lot in the industry is that you don't want to hit the first person in the group, because then everybody behind it sees it and it ruins the scare for them,
and it also becomes a scare backwards too at that point.
Exactly.
So it's a double whammy of suck.
Yeah, because you want a scare from the side or from behind.
Yeah,
so that it's a scare forward.
Yeah, but if you make the first person in the group freeze, it's an automatic scare backwards.
Yeah.
It's a scare backwards. Yeah, so you've got a scare to the middle or to the back of the group typically. That's a timing issue. Now,
these ways that they could be hidden are around corners, in dark spots of a room.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the more powerful ones I've seen done repeatedly is you have the classic fake door going into a room.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the door's open and you're walking into a room.
Right.
And the door doesn't actually move. It's just a fake door. And he hides behind the door.
Right.
And he's able to pop around because... Most people, I think, to check behind the doors when I go into a haunted house, because I'm me. But most people don't. But also, like I said, around the corner of a door is also a good place. Because people typically, when they go into a room, don't immediately look left and right. You can find blind spots there that people don't see.
Right. There's also ways to disguise... Well, and this kind of runs into one of our later on topics in this list... which is the dot room, they kind of merge together.
A little bit,
As if you hide an actor in plain sight, you know, they look to be part of the props.
Yeah.
You know, this is, you can do this with mannequins, for instance.
Exactly.
You know, have one of them be a person. That's something that we've seen a lot.
Yeah. And another one, and one of the best startles I've seen done in a while was an actor was simply crouched behind, like, a table or something.
Right.
Stood up, and then just slammed his hand down on the table right as we were rounding a corner and turning away from it. If you time it, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
And that's the type of thing where if you mistime it by half a second, it's over.
Well, and it's another one of those things where, you know, if you go into a room and you see someone, but they're not doing anything intimidating, your brain kind of relaxes for that split second. And then that's when a really good actor can just pop you.
Yeah. And we'll talk more about that scare in a minute.
Right.
Now,
another hidden one that we saw was at Waterloo with the shadows splitting.
Yes.
Because what they did was pretty ingenious. They had a slightly larger kid in the front, and then they had a couple of small ones all in black morph suits behind them. So there's one shadow, then there's two, then there's four, and it was really cool.
Yeah. Now, it's important that when you're doing these hidden actor scares, typically you want to hit on two sensory levels. You want to be able to, you know, pop into sight so they see you, but they also have to hear you.
Yes.
And so it's important to scream or make some noise. Now, a lot of haunts have started moving away from screams just to save actor voices, because it's a long season, folks, you know?
It is. That's something you can actually look at if you want to put the time into, you know, spending a little bit of training and money on your actors. If you're going to have them screaming, look at a vocal lesson.
Yeah, a vocal coach can help a lot. Teaching how to scream and how to project without ruining your voice.
Yeah.
And if you're an actor and you're into screaming for your roles, you might want to look into a vocal coach for yourself.
Yeah.
I don't know how many lessons it would take. I've not done this, but I've heard repeatedly that this is a good idea and it's not something that takes super long to learn.
Right.
Now, but yeah, the idea, like, I remember at The Abyss in St. Louis, the actors were doing the hidden actor scares, and they were jumping out with these, like, those plastic gas cans.
Right.
Filled with rocks, or I don't know what it was. Filled with something, marble, something noisy.
Yeah.
And they're just clanging it against crap. And, you know, the problem there is it was so dark they weren't actually jumping out invisibly.
Right.
But the idea there is to have a prop or something that makes a lot of noise.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I remember one, going back to that Boy Scout haunt we did way back when.
Mm-hmm.
They had an actor who would jump out. He had I'm guessing it was actually wooden, because there's no way a flimsy plastic bone would hold up to this. And he would just bang it against a metal folding chair.
Right.
And dear Jesus, that guy went through, I think, 3 folding chairs a night.
Yeah. I think the secret there was that he had a hammer hidden behind the bone.
That would not surprise me in the least. He tore through those folding chairs quicker than a wrestling match.
Right.
I mean, so yeah, but you can slam objects and make noise. Like I said, the idea here is the actor is not visible in the room.
Right.
He suddenly becomes visible, and he makes a noise or otherwise startles.
Right.
It's so simple. It's so straightforward. It's like the most basic scare. But that being said, it's so easy to mess up because the timing is so particular.
Yeah.
So, real, real easy to goof that one up. Okay, now something that's a little harder to goof up, and is the place where you sometimes stick, you know, your less trained, less...
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. You're not so good actors, but I have seen it messed up.
It can be messed up, and honestly...
And I've seen it messed up in the build side as well as the actor timing side.
And honestly, this is one, because, you know, we use these too, and I'm not saying the actors we put there are the bad ones.
No.
Because our actors all do multiple roles.
Yes.
And so if you do this, it's just like one of the tasks you have. And it's the classic drop panel.
Yeah.
Now, drop panel is basically
a hole in the wall.
And
it's usually disguised as a painting, or, you know, I like to hide mine by making it look like part of the scene.
Yeah.
Because I have, you know, and I've seen it used in others too, especially like brickwork. Brickwork works very well.
Yeah, because you can't see the lines.
Exactly. Yeah, brickwork, rocks, things like that hide the seams very well, so you don't have to have a picture frame around it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and it's always funny because it's like you can tell haunts apart by how they build their panels.
Yeah.
And you can tell haunts apart by how they build the drop panels too.
Right.
Everyone's got a different method.
Yeah.
And I've seen them done with, like, keyboard trays for the slide mechanism.
Right.
I've seen them done the way we do it, with just a 2x4 slide.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen it done with a gate latch at the top to hold it and release it. I've seen it as we do it, where you pull it out and drop it.
Right.
There's a bajillion T ways to do it. Go on YouTube right now. Google haunted house drop panel. There's tons of videos of ways to build them. And a couple of them are actually ours. We actually showcased our build technique on them on a few. Yeah. The old Bernie Baxter channel.
If we can find them, we will link them in the notes. If not, maybe we'll shoot a new one and put it out
there.
Yeah,
maybe we'll have to shoot a new one now. But the point is, there's an infinite number of ways. But the idea is, you put an actor behind it, the actor gets the benefit of the loud bang of the drop panel hitting the ground or hitting whatever the stop is.
Right.
It might not be the ground. And then being suddenly visible.
Yes.
There was a wall, now there's a person.
Yes. Well, there was a full wall, and now there's a window with a person. There's a difference.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
I'm saying that because we do have a wall that disappears.
Fair enough.
But the only difference there is with those slide tray drop panels like you were talking about, mm-hmm. you do not get the effect of the bang.
Yeah, not unless you do something else to rig it.
I haven't seen one of those where the noise is intimidating.
You need something for it to hit when it comes down. And, yeah, you can do it with the keyboard trays. It can be done. And what you do is you put a wooden stop at the bottom of the tray so it hits the tray right before the keyboard trays hit. And that way you're just using the slides to move it up and down
mm-hmm.
and put it back in place. But, yeah, you're right. If you use the keyboard trays, you don't get that sudden stop. But it still can be a very cool effect because, like I said, it'll drop very quickly. And you do have an actor there, then they can still scream or they can hit the wall and make noise themselves.
Right. One of the things to keep in mind with a drop panel, if you are having it go all the way to the bottom of the panel, is to make sure to put a kick plate in.
Oh, God, yes.
Because you don't want your actor's toes getting smushed accidentally.
And also think about weight.
Yeah.
We went through a lot of iterations on our drop panel design.
Right.
God, drop panels should be a whole new episode.
They probably will be.
But we went through a whole lot of iterations on our drop panel design. The first one was way too damned heavy of a panel.
Yeah.
It was a ridiculously heavy panel. It was too heavy to reset, too heavy. We had to swap out actors over the course of the night running it.
Which is bad because we only had two that could do it.
Two the whole night. That iteration went away. Make sure you think about the weight. Make sure it's heavy enough to be loud, but light enough to be easily put back in place. And here's the thing. You don't need a lot of weight, really.
Right. Because one of the secrets that we found
mm-hmm.
is that you can put a piece of metal along the bottom, which also saves your wood,
mm-hmm.
and a piece of metal at the bottom for it to strike against, which mm-hmm. gives you a clang,
mm-hmm.
which increases that noise.
Yep. Now, the one really cool thing about a drop panel is if you plan it right and you position them well, one actor can run several.
Right.
And we've seen, like, you go to Rise.
Yeah.
They have a whole zone in the cemetery where one person is operating, like, six drop panels. The most tired person in haunting is behind these drop panels.
Yes, yes.
And he's got to drop them quick.
Stamina of youth.
I could not do this.
No.
I'm not going to even attempt to pretend I could. Yeah, but you can have one actor operate multiple ones. Now, the best place we have found for drop panels is around corners.
Right.
And the thing is this, there's always a temptation to put it at, you know, the end of a hallway so they're staring at it the whole time as they're approaching it. And then, surprise! You know, there it is.
Yeah.
But, A, that's a scare backwards again. But also, it makes it difficult to scare the whole group.
Right.
Around a corner, you can hit to the middle of the group and you can nail it correctly, basically. And also, it's just like I said, you're hitting them on their blind side. They're not going to look at it too hard. If people have too much time to look at a drop panel, they're probably going to figure out that something is amiss. They might not think, drop panel, but they'll know something's amiss.
Right. And typically, if you do it around a corner, you can also use that technique that we're going to have a full episode on, mm-hmm. distract and startle.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can distract them far away from where the scare next to them is happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can elsewhere into the room or to the hallway.
Right.
Depending upon how you want to operate. So, yeah, the drop panel, it's a, and the thing about it for an actor, it is a great place to put someone who maybe is new or maybe just feeling the ropes. A, because they're in a completely safe space.
Right.
They're not going to be the one getting punched. They're not going to be the one getting charged or accidentally grabbing people or being grabbed.
Right.
They're probably the safest role. But also, it's one of the more easy ones to time as long as you have your cutouts properly and you tell them to target the middle of the group.
Right.
It's an easier scare to execute.
Yeah, because even if they're late on the drop, if you scare that last person, they're going to react and everybody else is going to look back and then they're going to run.
Yeah. That's the other thing is that with the hidden actor one, messing up the timing even a hair screws it up.
Yeah.
It's done. Just do better next group. You know?
Yeah.
A mistiming a drop panel by a hair, yeah, it lessens it. Yeah. But it still is visceral.
Yes, as long as you've got that loud bang.
You gotta have that loud bang. Make it visceral. Make it earth-shattering. You know what I mean? Now, the next one is one of my personal favorites, and it's what we call, lovingly, the dot room.
Yeah.
And that's just our little nickname for it.
Well, I think it's an industry term, too.
Maybe, I don't know. But basically, the idea of a dot room is you have a background with a pattern.
Yes.
And you have an actor dressed up in that same pattern. And the thing about it is that actor is in plain sight the entire time they're in the room.
Right.
They can see that actor. They just can't pull the actor out in the background.
Right. And there are different ways to do dot rooms. That's the most traditional way, I would say. This is a lot of times where you put an actor in a morph suit and you put them against the wall. And then you splash paint all over the walls and the actor to get the right technique and the right
look. Okay, stay like this and make them pull their arms out and don't move.
Well,
and stand exactly here the rest of the night. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's one way to do it. Another way is to make an actor look like a prop when they aren't a prop.
Like the mannequins we talked about. Or the weeping angels at, Necropolis 13. I call them weeping angels. They're just statues. Yeah. But
well, in, inside 13th Gate, they have the creepy doll room.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, make them look like a prop. Make them look like the background. Make them impossible to distinguish from the inanimate surroundings.
Yeah, I've actually seen them used in walls of a crypt, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which was pretty cool.
Yeah. The hands.
And there was one where they actually did the suit as part of a crypt wall.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and so they come out. It was really cool. We were looking at doing something like that this year. It didn't happen, but maybe next year.
Maybe another time. But
the thing about dot room actors, though, is that they have to have a lot of patience. Yeah. We're back to that timing thing.
Yeah. The patience of it is difficult because when you're in the dot room role, it doesn't matter how good you are, how good the setup is, you have to accept that a certain percentage of people are going to see the scare coming.
Yeah.
Someone's going to figure it out. So even if the actor is perfect, even if the setup is perfect, and this is true for any scare, but it's especially true for this one because it's a plain sight scare.
Right.
Everyone's going to get spotted a few times.
Yeah, I just remembered one more that's really actually hard to spot is the potted plant.
Okay.
Hi, Kronk.
Hi, Kronk. Yeah, dresses up in like a ghillie suit, is it?
Well, it's a suit with a plant on it.
It's a suit with a plant on it.
It's a plant.
I know what I'm putting on your tombstone. It's a suit with a plant on it. But yeah. Now, and like I said, it requires a great deal of patience because you have to be still, you have to be calm, and you have to wait for the people going through the home, wait for the customers to get in the correct position for the scare.
Right, and you have to also, like in the case of the potted plant, possibly be in a cramped position for a longer period of time than anticipated.
So agility pays off. Also, the ability to move stealthily pays off, too. I mean, the one I remember doing a lot was basically a black morph suit in a dark closet.
Right.
And it worked remarkably well. But you have to be able to move silently. You have to be able to blend in. You have to know how to be still. And it pays to know where the shadows are in a room.
Mm-hmm.
a lot of actors don't study their rooms and figure out where the darkest parts are and where the places they're most likely to get spotted are.
Right, so, and that's kind of hidden actor and a dark room scare.
Yeah, at that point it is. And those two do blend together, as you said. Yeah. But to me, the difference is with a dot room, the actor is in plain sight right. the whole time.
Yeah.
Where a hidden actor is around a corner, is somewhere they should not be looking. Now, sudden relocation. This is getting into the higher end and more difficult to pull off scares.
Yeah, it is. And, oh, man. So, there's a couple of ways to do this. And basically, I guess we should say, sudden relocation is when one actor appears somewhere else later on.
Yeah, you have, or even
in the same room,
or even immediately.
Yeah,
because you have an actor who, oh, that actor. Like my one of my favorite examples of is actually 13th Gate.
Yeah,
they have an actor having exorcism performed on a bed, and she's all snarling and growling and stuff. And the priest is priesting over, I guess that's a verb.
It is now.
It is now priesting over her. And then the lights go out for just, like, the briefest of moments. And then when they come back up, the actor is literally crossed your path. It looks like. This is the appearance. Right. Crossed your path and is on, like, a nightstand in the corner opposite of you.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a very, very compelling scare because it's difficult even for haunters to figure out how it's done.
Yeah. I would love to see how they do that one.
I have theories. I have not actually confirmed it, but I have theories.
Yeah, I have theories too. I like trying to figure it out. There's also, you know, secret passageways.
Yes.
So that if there's time to get an actor from the front to the back of your haunt, depending on how you space out your groups, this works well for smaller haunts.
Yeah. And it worked. And the thing is, if you're going to do an actor relocation, even if it's within the same room, but especially if it's going to be over a longer arc of the haunt,
right?
It's got to be a very distinctive. It's got to be a very distinctive actor,
right?
Someone that they're going to remember 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes later.
They should be able to recognize them instantly.
Yeah. And, I mean, some haunts have done this where they slip in an actor with a group as a plant and then have them appear dead later.
Right.
That's not exactly what we're after here, but the concept is have someone that they recognize, someone that they will know when they see down the road.
Right. And also kind of in the same vein is the disappearing actor and the switcheroo.
Yeah.
I think that could kind of be lumped in with this.
Absolutely.
So the disappearing actor, this is something we've actually played with, is that we have a guide who says,
follow me.
Follow me, you know. I'm going to keep you safe.
That's safe.
So in the first hallway, she disappears. Now the first year, that's all that happened, was that your guide disappeared, you were on your own. Mm-hmm. The second year, we had the switcheroo happen, where the guide switches with the stalker.
Yeah.
And they're
dressed enough alike.
Enough alike and about the same build, so it's not immediately apparent that they have switched.
Yeah, that it's a different person.
Yeah.
And that is like, that's a form of actor relocation, because the stalker, the guide was in front of the group.
Right.
Disappeared for the blink of an eye and reappeared behind them.
Yes.
It's a classic actor relocation.
Yeah.
It's just done in this case by using a hidden offshoot that the actors can duck into.
Right.
And hear from.
And with that kind of thing, you have to have great communication and great timing on the part of both actors.
Yes.
You know, because if one is waiting for a signal from the other, that person given the signal has to be able to time it just right.
Yeah. And this is one of those that pays the practice moments.
Yeah.
It really, really does. The idea of the sudden relocation, though, is to mess with people's minds. And this is delving also into the realm of magic some.
Right.
You know, study some magic tricks if you want. And the idea, though, basically is make an actor who was one place suddenly reappear somewhere else, or at least an appearance.
Right. Yeah, and I'm sure that we'll have a whole...
Absolutely.
episode on magic techniques in the haunts, how useful they are.
Yeah, exactly. Another scare that we actually put to practice last year, and have seen done well in many different haunts, is the actor lunge.
Yes.
Now, the basic of the actor lunge is an actor appears to be somehow trapped.
Right.
Whether they are chained in a cage, they appear to be somehow tethered.
Now, I have seen this one play at 13th Gate. Their lunge actor in the ice cape is not actually trapped. They're hidden into a little alcove.
Yeah.
And they lunge forward on like a bungee.
And we've also seen the scarecrows and others do this too at various haunts.
Right.
But the idea is you have an actor that you believe to be in one location. Yes. Usually they start out in plain sight. In fact, typically for this type of lunge, you would want them in plain sight.
Right.
And they can communicate. They can say, help me. They can say, I'm going to get you or whatever. You know, and they can interact. And then suddenly they lunge forward toward the crowd and are usually stopped by some physical means, whether it's the bookshelf that they're tied to stops, they're chained to the wall and the chains finally catch them.
Right.
Or, in the case like the scarecrows, the bungee around their waist pulls them back up.
Yeah. They don't want to fall off.
They don't want to fall off. That takes a lot of trust in that harness. Yeah. I'm just throwing that out.
And I think the first place we saw the chain one was actually at Rise. And that actor did two. They did the lunge, but then they also were able to be freed.
And
chase after
out.
The group a little bit.
Yeah.
But it was very effective.
The lunge can be extremely effective because whenever you see an actor in the room and you know where they are, as you said earlier, that provides a relief. Because you're not facing the unknown now.
Right.
You're facing the known known.
Right. Yes, the known known unknowns. No.
No, you're facing but
the
you're,
num num num. Anyway, they're especially the ones that look like they cannot move from where they're at.
They're safe. You know where they are. You know what their shtick is. You feel comfortable.
Right.
And then surprise.
Yeah. Another place that did that really well, and they haven't had it for a few years. I'm really, you know, sad that they don't. Is that Necropolis with the fence that came down and all the zombies broke through the fence and the fence came towards you and they came towards you and they just don't do it anymore.
Yeah, and like I said, it all comes from that place of, haha, you can't hurt me, you're chained to a wall, you're behind a fence, you're in a cage, you're insert reason they can't get at you.
Right.
Then
brain
suddenly
goes whoosh,
then suddenly guard lets down. Then, boom, right at them.
Yep.
And the beautiful thing about this gag is since there's a physical location on how far the actor can go, you can keep them safe.
Yeah.
You can keep them out of the walking path, but they can go as hard as their body will allow them.
Right.
Like with that chain gag where they're chained to the wall, remember, this isn't like a slow lunge or even a swipe, you know, far away. This is a... run as hard as you can, and then get caught by the chain.
Yeah.
It's beautifully simple.
Yeah.
And it allows the actor to go full force without fear of either A, accidentally touching, bumping, grabbing the customers.
Right.
Or B, getting hurt themselves.
Yeah. It's kind of important.
Yeah, it is kind of important. And that's a really, really, really great feeling because it's a sense of confidence that the scare can just, you know, come together and happen naturally.
Right.
Okay, the creepy actor. This is a tough one.
It is, because creepy is something that really is different for everyone. You know, it's...
What I find creepy... You might... some people find clowns creepy.
Yeah.
I don't care. I'm nonplussed by clowns. Clowns do not bother me in the least. They don't like, turn me on or scare me.
No.
It's like, it's a clown.
Yeah.
That's the end of it. It's a flipping clown. But some people are mortified of them.
Yes.
Those people, a clown in the room is terrifying.
Yes. That's not just creepy, that's terrifying.
But it's creepy too.
Yeah.
It's going to get them on a visceral level. Where to me it's like, hi clown, what's up? How you doing? But creepy dolls weird me the hell out.
Yeah.
I mean, That Uncanny Valley stuff really bothers me sometimes. It hits me on the gut.
Yeah. I find that things that are normal in not normal situations, like kids laughing and having fun.
And a murder scene.
In a murder scene, yeah. Yeah. Things like that are what I remember. Yeah. That, to me, is creepy.
Yeah, the basic idea of the creepy actor scare is you take someone who... This isn't a scare role, at least not in the traditional startle sense.
No, but they are going... A lot of the times, the ones who can pull off creepy really well...
Are the most memorable.
Yeah, definitely. They're the ones that you're going to remember for years to come. And that people are going to be talking about.
Like,
I know that there are still kids that came through our haunted house years ago that talk about, you know, the itsy bitsy spider lady. Because I was singing the itsy bitsy spider in a corner right as I dropped a ceiling on their heads. But,
but yeah, I mean,
but they remember the singing part.
Yeah. And that's the thing is the creepy actor sits in the room. They're always visible.
Right.
And they are interacting with the customers in a way that is just genuinely creepy. This is tough to pull off. A, because as you said, what's creepy to one person might not be creepy to the next.
Right.
But the other is being a genuinely creepy person.
Yeah.
Is hard.
Yeah.
It really is a rare gift to find someone who gets creepy.
Right. There are some people who are naturally creepy and they just don't know it.
Yeah. And then that's just it. And those people often don't work out well in the haunt. Like, some of the best creepy actors I've seen are perfectly normal people.
Yeah.
In the day-to-day life. But you get them inside a room, it's like, okay, pretend like a mental patient. And they'll start singing Itsy Bitsy Spider.
Hey, that worked.
It did.
No, I'm saying that's what I'm saying.
They can be really creepy.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is that people who are naturally creepy in their real life tend to want to do hard scare roles. Yeah. And they would do so much better if they would just accept their creepiness. Yeah.
Now,
accept it. Take it in.
And relish it. Use that power.
Yeah.
Now, this role is often best done by people who are not physically intimidating.
Right.
If you've got the big old guy that can, you know, and scare people, he needs to be somewhere else. Or a woman that's, you know, built like a brick shithouse, put him elsewhere.
Okay.
Put him somewhere else. But this is also, I mean, kids and haunts, total other topic.
Yeah.
We're coming to it, I'm sure. But if you're going to have kid actors, this is a good scare for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kids are creepy by themselves.
Yeah. It's one of the few roles that I agree that kids can do well in a haunt. Because you're not going to have a kid chase me with a knife or some other prop or yell at me and scare me.
I'm going to get you.
Yeah.
So, you're five.
Yeah.
I could stomp you.
I could put my hand on your head and keep you at bay.
Baby, you can't cut me.
Yeah.
And so it's one of those things where... But kids are naturally creepy.
Yeah.
And that's one of those things because they are kind of... If you think about it, kids are kind of uncanny valley anyway. Because they look like people, but they're like way smaller. They're like midgets. Dwarves.
Oh, God. You're so getting letters to this.
No, I mean, but seriously, they do play with the Uncanny Valley just a little bit on their own because they're kids.
Yeah.
And they're not, like, full-size grown adults. They look a little weird to people who spend their time mostly with adults.
Can you tell we don't have kids?
Yeah, we don't have kids, by the way.
Yeah, we have stepson, but he's already mostly grown.
And he's effectively grown. He's fine. He won't take any offense to this.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, but this is the type of role you want. If you're going to put a child actor in, this is a good role.
Yeah.
Then finally, you have background actor roles.
Right.
These are basically anyone who sets the scene. And honestly, as weird as this next statement's going to be, I think these are where you stick some of your best actors. Like, theatrical actors.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Like, if you've got someone who actually can talk and communicate and improv with the audience. They either A, go front of house where they interact with the line,
right,
or B, they become background in a room where they can convey the story very quickly. Oh, you need to get out of here. So-and-so is going to come get you. Please, exit. I mean...
Yeah, it's like Mortuary and Ravencroft.
Yeah.
He does the front line shtick sometimes, but he's also the first person you see inside, and he kind of explains what the theme is and what you're going to be going through and that kind of thing.
But it can be like 13th Gate. It can be as quick as the coroner in the 13th Gate during the Jack the Ripper sequence. Yeah. Oh, hello, welcome to the... Never mind the bodies. Please step over the gut trail there and never mind that. Would you need anything? Need a direction? Just basically talking, not scaring anyone, but setting the scene by being dressed in the period piece, and being dressed for the scene.
Yeah.
Being in the proper accent and acting like someone in that scene. Basically making the room feel alive.
Make you feel like you're part of the scene.
Exactly.
Like you're part of a movie.
And it is really, really tough to be a good background actor.
Yeah.
Because you have to be able to talk to the crowd. You have to be able to interact. You have to be able to engage.
And you have to be convincing.
And you have to be convincing. And it's not a scare role, so people tend to think it's not important. And I call it bullcrap.
Yeah, and I mean, that is one of the things with a lot of new actors to haunted houses. And let us know if you guys see this too. Is that, like, their first time, everybody wants a scare roll.
Yes.
Like a hard scare roll.
Yep. I want to make people pee themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. Which...
I get that, believe me.
There is definitely a place for that. But not everybody in your haunt can do that.
Well, not everyone in your haunt can do it. And not everyone in your haunt should do it.
Right.
Because...
That's more what I meant.
Yeah, no, both were right. Because not everyone can. Right. Not everyone's right for those hard scare roles.
Right. Kids aren't.
I mean...
As we talk.
Yeah, the kid comes out, I'm going to kill you. It's, no, you're not. It's not happening, dude, little dude.
Yeah.
I could kick into the next zip code. It's just...
No, anyway.
But no, the point is, people poop on background actors all the time.
Yeah.
And it's not right. Because it's probably one of the roles that requires the most theatrical talent.
Yeah.
You have to, and it requires definitely the most lines of dialogue.
Right. And some are scripted and some are just improv.
Yeah.
And you have to know which actors can improv if you're not giving them a script.
Yeah, definitely. Now, one of my favorite background actors was back at 13th Gate again, and just after the coroner scene we were just talking about.
Yeah.
There was a guy laying on the ground as you were winding through old London who had one line. That was the line. He was playing a plague victim on the ground.
Yeah, it's a dot room situation.
Yeah.
Dot room and setup.
Yeah, but it wasn't meant to be necessarily a scare, but it was so weird because, A, I remember they haven't had that guy there for like 5 years.
Yeah, I think he's still there.
I don't think he was there last time.
I thought he was.
Anyways. But I always remember that scene because it added a dimension to the room. It wasn't really a scare because it was just a mild cough, but it added a dimension.
Well, okay, so while we're on 13th Gate for a minute, two other examples is the doctor's assistant while they have the Jack the Ripper theme.
Yeah. Jekyll and Hyde is that one.
Jekyll and Hyde.
The Jekyll and Hyde theme, yeah.
Yeah.
They jump between them.
Yeah, it's...
It's kind of confusing, but...
It is. But anyway, she plays a great role, and she sets up the scene for what's going to happen next, which is kind of a letdown, but that's something else. That's another show altogether. And then there's the gypsy girl outside who talks about... Yes. Who talks about what you're going to be doing next, about her brother in the woods and stuff.
And also like that, the vampire girl at Necropolis across the street there. Very similar situation. Stop the crowd, ask questions, talk to them, engage with the audience, and basically set the stage for what happens next, and also build up some anticipation.
Right.
That's what it's all about. And people, like I said, poo-poo background roles, and I don't know why I'm not swearing now. But people dump all over those roles, but the reality is they are some of the hardest to do. They require the most talking, most interaction.
Right.
And you've got to be very quick on your feet to pull them off.
Yeah.
I would. It is at least as difficult as any scare roll, I would say.
Yeah.
Okay, a few rolls that we personally do not recommend, and the reason I'm not recommending them is because I've been to a lot of haunts that have tried these, and I've never seen one work well.
Yeah.
The first, gross out gags.
Yeah.
Like, just straight up, not necessarily, I mean, I'm of the mindset that if it has to be gory to be scary, it's not scary.
Mm-hmm.
Gore is fine. I'm not opposed to gore, but it shouldn't be a crutch. Now, but here I'm really talking more about gross out gags like the poop room.
Yeah, it seems like, okay, so I don't know what it is, and if you guys listening in or in the industry know what it is, what is up with poop? It's not scary, but I see it over and over again in haunts, and I don't get it.
Yeah, like...
I really don't. Please explain it to me.
Like, one haunt had its actors pull a fake turd out of the toilet, pretend to take a bite out of it, or throw it at the customers.
Yeah.
And other stuff. And I've seen others that pretend, like, to smear it on the walls.
Yeah.
And other stuff. And, yeah, we've seen a million poop things.
Yeah.
And it just never really works. We've seen others with, like, boils and, you know, some grossness there. And, yeah, it can be revolting. It can set the tone, I guess. But the problem is, I don't know. It doesn't work for me. And no. Most other people don't respond to it in the way that's intended, I think.
Yeah, I don't
The most common reaction the poop room got in one place we worked at was laughter.
Yeah.
People were actually laughing. Which, I mean, laughter is not necessarily a terrible reaction. It is a reaction.
Yeah.
But it's not the reaction it was supposed to get.
Yeah. I mean, if it were intentional to get that reaction and you were doing it right before a huge scare, then, you know,
yeah,
then you're setting your audience up and relaxing them before
you... If it were a bunch of cannibals eating a clown going, hey, does this taste funny to you?
Yeah.
That would be fine. Yeah. But no, okay, another one is vulgar and insulting gags.
Yeah.
This tips into the extreme haunts some, and we'll be talking more about those. But we've seen this at regular haunts too, where the nature of the scare is just to be as vulgar and or as offensive as possible.
Yeah.
Like verbally offensive, especially.
Right.
And
you got some thoughts on this? Because it's just.
Well, I mean, the main thing is this. You know, your haunted attraction, I always put it like this. Your haunt is going to be open at most 8 weeks out of the year, out of a 52-week year.
Right.
You need every customer you can get.
Yeah.
And driving away customers because you're being vulgar, you're hitting particular sensibilities, doesn't benefit your bottom line.
Right. People aren't going to bring their kids to your haunt.
Yeah. You want to sell those tickets. And I understand the idea of more mature haunts. I get that. That's fine. But, you know, at the same time, your haunt can be very scary, very, very, you know, visceral, very impactful without necessarily having the result to insulting people's sensibilities or being excessively vulgar.
Right.
In that way, I think it's a lot like, you know, excessive gore. If it has to be vulgar and insulting to be scary, it's not scary.
Yeah. It's like having to explain a joke. It's not funny.
Exactly. You're taking it somewhere it doesn't need to go.
Yeah.
And finally, and this one I know is a broad one, but roles that don't do anything. We have seen far too many people...
Yeah.
Doing roles that could or should have been done by props.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially if you don't have a lot of people working at your haunt.
Mm-hmm.
If you had it set up so that there were supposed to be, you know, 25 people, and I know that's a small number, and only 10 of them showed up, well, don't keep them in the same roles if their roles were just filler roles.
Yeah.
Move them, cross train them, move them into the other roles for when those people don't show up.
Yeah, it's...
Because it would be better to have some empty space than to have an actor not doing anything important. You know, if they're not setting up, if they're not being a background, if they're not doing any of the things we've talked about so far,
then regardless of whether you have a volunteer haunt or a paid haunt,
right,
your actors are your most valuable asset.
Yes.
Don't waste them.
No.
Background roles are fine as long as they are active background roles.
Yeah.
And they can even be as simple as that dude who coughed.
Yeah.
That's a fine background role if it adds something. But we have been to haunts where they do things like they will put actors in cages and the actors are just supposed to sit there and not say anything.
Yeah. It's basically just another warm body.
It's just...
if you have the luxury of having that many actors that you can just waste them, then, you know, that's one thing. But I don't know of many haunts who have that luxury. No.
And, you know, actors who aren't doing anything, and this is the thing, it's kind of weird, because we talked about creepy actor roles, and a lot of creepy actor roles don't do a whole lot. But you have to make sure that the not doing anything is creepy.
Yeah.
If they're just scenery, they're just decoration. You know, if they're not interacting with the crowd in some way,
right,
it's probably a waste. If they're not interacting with the crowd, you probably could have filled them with a reasonably good prop.
Yeah.
Or an animatronic or something else and saved yourself an actor for something. Because the main thing is this. Actors are like props that have supercomputers in their brain, in their head. You know what I mean? That's what an actor is.
Yeah.
It's a supercomputer prop.
Yeah.
Don't waste them on things that can be done by a simple switch, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Make sure that your actors are staying busy and...
Yeah, because props don't have to be intuitive. They don't have to be able to read a crowd.
No.
You know, that's something a good actor.
They get the trigger, they do their thing, and that's the end of
it.
That's exactly it. And so, yeah, make sure your actors are actually interacting.
Yes.
With the customers in some way, shape, or form.
Wow, that word had acting in
it. I know. It was like it was a coincidence or something.
Yeah.
Anyways, so that's the basic rundown of, you know, the actor roles we think of and we sort of put into context.
Right.
Is there anything I missed when I was drafting the notes? I know we brainstormed these, but...
Oh, I'm sure that there's tons I'm sure there's tons we missed.
Yeah, this is the periodic table of actor roles. And here's the other thing.
Actually, one that we missed is a guide.
Oh, yeah, it's true.
We didn't even talk about guides, other than the disappearing one.
Okay, not every haunt has them, but yeah, a guide is someone who leads the group from room to room,
yeah,
or through the haunt. Typically, these are done in the scene-based haunts.
Right.
Like a lot of hell houses do these, where you have the scene set up.
And charity haunts.
And charity haunts, too. Where you have the scene set up, so the guide leads them in and stops the line and tells them where to stand for the scene. I'm not a big fan of scene-based haunts. I'm not a big fan of hell houses.
Right.
But if you're in that type of haunt, yes, you need a guide.
Yeah.
But yeah, we've played with the fake guide.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm going to lead you to the haunt. Screw you.
Yes.
We've played with that role a lot. But yeah, so other than that, though, yeah, guides are primarily for haunts where you need to have the crowd stop at various points.
Okay, so one other thing is that first haunt that we worked in,
mm-hmm,
I was a guide for the first night.
Yeah.
And they had us be creepy. Or maybe I'm just naturally creepy.
You're naturally creepy. Give up the ghost on that one now.
Yes. I heard people saying, basically we were just in black hooded robes,
mm-hmm,
with a little bit of makeup, and we would just glare at people. Yes.
Yeah, so, no, you're naturally creepy. You just give up that ghost now.
Yeah.
I just give it up.
So you can have the guide be a creepy role. You can also have them be part of the scene and part of the storyline.
Yeah.
You know, they can have their own story arc throughout it.
And one place to go if you want to investigate that idea more is the Great Movie Ride at Disney World. They actually do that with the guides.
Okay.
On the rides. The guide, at least when I did it, was kidnapped by a character from one of the movies.
Yeah.
And so they played that in the guide. It's interesting to see how they use guides, basically.
Yeah.
So look up that. But the other thing I was going to say is be sure to try to find ways to combine these scares. These are just like basic units of scare.
Right.
They can be found in the scare molecules.
Yes.
Very easily. Do that. It's a lot of fun to combine, you know, these elements.
Experiment.
And one actor can sometimes do multiple scares. For example, a creepy actor can do a lunge.
Right.
You can use both of those. It does. Now, that being said, an actor lunge doesn't require you to be creepy.
Right.
It just requires you to be bound to something, or otherwise, you know, at least looking like you're bound. But you can combine the scares, is what I'm saying.
Right.
I think that's all we have right now, though.
Yeah. If we've missed anything big, please let us know.
Yeah.
And we'll be sure to touch on it in a later
comments,
episode.
Facebook, Twitter us. Otherwise, get in touch. We are Haunt Weekly on Facebook and Twitter, and we are at hauntweekly.com as our site. So get in touch with us either through Twitter or Facebook, and we will happily listen to any scares we might have missed. Maybe we'll do a follow-up with more actor scares.
Yeah, it sounds like a plan.
That sounds like something that could very realistically happen.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, everyone, I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this was Haunt Weekly, Episode 7, talking about actor scares. Ooh! Really shouldn't do the ooh at the end of every podcast.
The itsy bitsy spot.